Boom.
Recording.
Okay. I want to start with a story.
Sweet.
I'm going to tell a story.
Tell me a story.
I'll tell you a story, Rob. So I know I've told the story in the past about how years ago when I was grocery shopping by myself, I got so wrapped up in a comic story idea that just came to me almost fully formed that I came home with like nothing that was on my grocery list, you know, like a hammer and diapers and whatever.
Yeah.
And I love telling that story because, like, yeah, like this relates to a topic that I wanted to throw at you. But like when I get wrapped up in it, I get so focused that I forget everything else going on around me, which is not necessarily a good thing. So I've been pulling some long shifts this last week. I feast or famine time. It's feast time and deadlining a lot of projects at once. And I'm literally pulling 16, 17 hour days on this stuff and grocery shopping with my wife and the other day. And we had like five things on the grocery list, like it was like an onion and garlic and a block of tofu and a couple like really straightforward things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking through the store with her and I'm putting like kiwis in the basket and I'm putting, you know, like collard greens and all this stuff that we just didn't need. And I wasn't even paying attention. And it's not like I was talking about anything. We were just like doing the normal couple chit chat while you're grocery shopping. And Ann says to me, what are you doing? What are we doing with kiwi and a, you know, collard greens? And I heard myself, and it was as if I was watching somebody else. I heard myself turn to her and almost start crying and said, I'm so tired. So it was not the good kind of distraction. It was the bad kind of distraction. I was exhausted, and I was just buying anything.
Sure, your machine isn't working, or like only the core machine is working.
That's right. Like,
I have locomotion, and I have hunger. Yeah, and a wallet.
It was all I could do to keep walking, you know, and just keep like, you know, I don't know. But that was weird hearing myself do that.
Wow, man. Yeah, that is, you definitely, you know, you've been working hard at that point. So, I mean, did you feel after that, after the bummer moment, did it also feel like, yeah, I've been working hard, you know, like some kind of satisfying too or what?
You know, I have come to really appreciate a good night's sleep. I mean, really appreciate it. And I'm feeling less and less of a machismo of not getting a good night's sleep. So I, you know, I'm still in that really, really tired zone. So I don't know, Rob, but
we're about to create the stressors that cause another I just need sleep moment.
No, but I actually put something in my Evernote.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I went this lack of sleep and sort of diffusion of focus thing caused something in my freelance work that upon its occurrence I said I better jot this down and bring it to Rob because I think he would be able to respond to this and maybe I could bring a topic to the extra lean for a change rather than sort of just show up and respond. getting inside the client's mind.
Oh, getting my. Inside the client's I did not even see, sense, or feel that one coming. Okay.
So I'm working on a couple different freelance projects at once right now. As you would say, I'm breaking boards.
Sure. Yeah.
And I got some notes from my client, and God bless the client. They were being very patient and very generous with their notes because they were saying, look, I don't want to be picky, but, right? And as I'm looking over these notes, I'm like, those are all very reasonable edits, very straightforward changes. And what's more is, as I read them, I was like, you know, I should have known not to do that. These are things that are so straightforward that had I focused a little harder and put myself in the client's shoes, I would have known not to do this. Now, they weren't big deals. They're like really minor changes, no big deal. And it's not something where I'm like beating myself up about it. It's just that it was a great, you know, we talk about teachable moments. We talk about learnable moments. This is a moment where I made a very serious giant check mark in my brain and said, hey, remember, next time when you're doing a project, no matter who it's for, you have to assume the position of the client and understand where they're coming from so you can deliver what they need without having to go through a lot of changes. I'm wondering what your what your position on this, because I mean, I imagine you are spending a lot of time living out your clients'. I mean, usability. This is like what this is job one, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's very much a collaborative design situation, and there's different ways to facilitate that. What you're talking about is actually, I mean, that's a really, really difficult thing to do. What you are aspiring to do, when I think what you're getting at by saying essentially get into the client's mind. Cause I guess, I don't know, like it's funny, that speaks to a lot of things to me. Cause part of it is, I'm just going to go where my gut went with this or whatever. And
please do
forgive me if offense occurs from this. So to me, it reminds me of some of the, myth level expectations that people have of artists. That somehow through the universe and your natural in-tune sensitivity with it and the weird stuff you creative people do, all of a sudden you read my mind, and I may not be that intentional about what I, you know, choose or expect, but I have reactions and I have emotion and impression, all that stuff. And you somehow navigated that without me needing to say anything. And I think that's not necessarily what you're saying, but I think that's an extreme version that does exist commonly for what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's really hard, like, and a really difficult position to be in. So what I like to do is I think of collaborative design as a shared at let's see. Man, there's so many different styles, and this is actually a thing I would like to somehow get more out of my head about it. But like, there's different modes, and the two that come to mind are I like to at least get the client to participate in my decisions I'm making, and then they have a chance to vote as we go, and then they have some participation in the rationale as well, and also commitment and buy-in, right? And this is that exactly. That's why I Chinese finger trap them, right? I'm like. Yeah. Guess what? This is the path we took, right?
Yeah.
And now there was no guessing. There was no surprise. So the new criteria is new criteria. Now we can talk about change orders. Now we can talk about billing you more. Now we can tell, you know, and yeah, exactly. Because I think there's so many convenient things and side effects that come from that fully in tuned, even if I put, because nowadays this, you could chalk this up to me being, I don't know, just a grumpy veteran or whatever, but like, even if I get the eurekas and the ahas, like that's it, I've tuned into your wavelength and I think I figured it out, I will sandbag and I will say, cool, let's talk this out. And then make them participate in the choices because I'm providing a service and I need to have clear boundaries as I provide that service. All right. So anyway, whatever. I don't know if that was going in any direction you were thinking.
No, thank you. That I think that's a good trenching of the topic, because you raise a really good point that we don't want to be genies either, right?
Yeah. And once in a while, there are factors that force you to become more or less. Like if someone's like, oh, I get, I'm paying you for a premium. And oh, I get that we don't have time to do a lot of reviews. So, you know, that's it. It's go time and talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then once in a while, you end up in that situation. And then you pretty much are doing exactly what you said.
Yeah. Where I was going with it was more or less of, I'm in a situation where I'm doing recurring work for a company that I've done work for in the past. So this is somebody I have a history with. I'm familiar with what their ethos is, with what their voice is, and I made a silly mistake where I wrote something into the documentation or the I'm doing an instructional comic. And I wrote something into the script of the instructional comic that contradicts one of their core voice stylings. And when they pointed it out to me, and they were very kind about it, it was one of those kind of like, oh, doy, You know, I'm not assuming.
Gotcha, is, no. Is, I got it. Yeah, that's way, way more mild. I went to some crazy.
No, no. Extreme. Well, I think this is the cool thing about discussing this topic is we're defining two ends of a spectrum here. Mm-hmm. Is on the one hand, I wholeheartedly agree with you that you want them to be an active participant. You don't want it to just be draw for me, monkey. Here's money. I don't care how it gets done. But read my mind and put it on paper, yeah. Right?
Yep.
No, attitude, give it attitude, that kind of thing, that kind of like art instruction. And one of the clients I'm working with right now is they are so skittish about being that guy to me. they're like, look, I don't want to be the person who says make it 10% happier. I've heard you talk about this. I don't want to be that guy. So please tell me if my edits and changes are not clear.
Yeah.
So yeah, you want them to be a participant, and you want to discuss and interview them and get them involved in the decision making process. But on the other hand, on the other end of the spectrum is that you also have a responsibility as the freelancer to fully understand who you're serving, right?
Yeah, and some of that can come. So you have invested more time, and they have you have provided service with this client before. You've gone on, you know, project adventures together, and through that you should have some kind of relationship context. Versus someone that's brand new.
What did I do with that card? I have a card written where I wrote down what you called yourself. Oh, Soldier Creative Fortune. We go on creative adventures together, project adventures, as soldiers of creative fortune. Did you see that we got a YouTube comment on that episode where somebody think like this has to happen?
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah. You're good at coining those things.
That's funny.
Oh,
Okay, where was I going with that? I here's a couple of distinctions I think is interesting. I think the relationship with the client, where you understand their criteria, to as far as what they're seeking and their goals for the project and their things that are important to them that need to be embodied in it. But then I also think there's there's a client aspect, and there's the what about the position along the creative process path, right? That so what the level of maturity or development that the project has gone through, right? So versus conceptualizing and whatnot on through elaborating into something that they want you to do, and then you go do that thing, and then that then it's a rough draft, and however many checkpoints you want them, they want to, and you want them to participate in, right, kind of thing. And so was this where was this along that path? Was this like, cool, this is a candidate for final? Or was it?
It was a candidate for final. This particular project, while it's time consuming, there's not a whole lot of thresholds in the process. It's more like, you've done this before for us. Here's a script, or rather, here's a wish list of information that needs to go in this. We know you can concoct it into some kind of logical progression, and you know what to make visual, what not to make visual. We'll just trust you on that. Give us a draft. We'll probably sign off on the first draft. And so then I gave them the draft, and they were happy with the flow of information. They were very happy with, but there was like a few semantics bits in there where it's like, oh, we don't use that kind of language. And it's not like I had loaded with swears, but it was more like, I had characters saying, don't do this, when they wanted to say, no, we would prefer that you say, we'd like it if you did that. Right. Stuff like that, where
gotcha.
It's like, it's a cultural thing. Right. And so once I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. And it felt to me like, to use a really crappy metaphor, it's like an actor who phones it in versus an actor who gets involved in the role and inhabits the character. And I feel like sometimes creative freelance gigs are like that, where, and especially in the ones I'm working on right now, where the cultures of these two different companies I'm working for are so different. One of them has almost a religious reverence for their CEO, and then the other one is more of a public-spirited organization without any kind of like central figurehead. So,
Okay, that would be pretty different.
Yeah, very different. Wow. So like it in trying to just meet my deadlines, I was just pushing through and trying to break those boards without taking that moment to stop, take a breath, and focus before I try to break the boards. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I know exactly. I know what you mean. And so my trick for catching that is if, you know, I more or less framed it up already by talking about the having some kind of progression and sort of a creative maturity as far as like that I push things through. And early on, I have things are riddled with mistakes, right? But then if I iterate and I, you know, sometimes the clients want to participate in that iteration. Other times they don't want to see it until, you know, certain really clear checkpoints.
Yeah.
Or only the final thing. But, that happens. And I think that happens to people who, especially if they have more than one client. More likely.
I hope so. Because I hope I'm not alone on this, or that this isn't like a mark of my creative immaturity. But
I wasn't talking about us as the, you know, artists, but yeah, I'm more looking at I don't know. I've seen it. I see it.
Oh yeah. Anyway, I'm tired, Rob. I bet you're tired too.
I am pretty tired. Yes. I happen to be solo parenting it while my wife is out at a conference. So that's
For multiple days?
For multiple days. So, goodness. Yeah. But, very challenging.
How does that work?
I mean, not to whatever wine. I mean, there's parents that do this day in, day out, important. Whatever. The challenging thing for me is that was what I do to myself when it's like I get to the point where I know she is you know, whatever, she's in bed and all that. And now I'm like, okay, I got to time box myself now and not get so, like I get endorphin rushes off of working on my projects. I'm sure I'm sure you do. And anyone else listening to this does too. It's like, I mean, if your brain wasn't rewarding you for going through this hard work, you know, you probably wouldn't do it, you know?
Yeah.
So a danger I've experienced a lot is all of a sudden getting really excited and into it and then disappearing into the work for a while. And I look up and it's really late. And it's like in these situations, I can't depend on my partner then to make sure our daughter gets up and ready and stuff. And, right. And I'm the fool that did this to myself. So yeah,
it's funny. I cracked open Metroid Prime, the first game, the other day.
Cool.
It was like my winding down. Here I am complaining about how tired and busy I am and what you're playing video games. It was like I got 40 minutes before bed. I'm going to unwind a little bit. And you know what? I haven't played this game in probably 8 years. Oh, wow. And I was thinking fond memories of it recently. So I was like, let's see how it holds up. I mean, it's 11 years old now, you know? Mm-hmm. Pop it in and I'm playing for about maybe 15 minutes. And I'm like, this feels really good and nostalgic, but I'm done. You know, I'm tired. I got to go to bed. I got too much to do. I got to look at my emergent task planner before I go to bed kind of thing. I was just done with it. And I remember thinking I had like a little bit of regret. Like that game used to satisfy me so much when I didn't want to walk away from it. I could log in 4 or 5 hours at a go when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that, that rush I get comes from the work now, you know? And it's not like, I'm not saying like, oh, what a good boy am I. It's more like it's a seismic shift I went through. And now that's where I derive that endorphin rush is not. It's very similar. I don't know how it is for you, but it's very similar to me. It's the same satisfaction I got when I unlocked like a special thing in Metroid.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, so it's Rafe Koster categorizes, what's he has? I want to pull this up real quick. He has a... let me see. He has a presentation called The Core of Fun, which is related to his theory of fun. And he's big on the various forms of expression that show how games are enjoyable patterns for our brains to consume, right? Mm-hmm. And he's looking like this presentation is like he's really trying to dive into establishing a grammar for games to be able to express them in a symbolic language that is, you know, you could understand it as well as someone who knows sheet music can interpret that as music, right?
Cool.
He's a very interesting guy. And what was he? I'm trying to. Anyway, one of his a portion of his thesis is that so Visual compositions are made of large, are made of small visual compositions, and songs are you know, in music, songs are made of small songs, right? Melodies and portions of song. And then also games are made of games. And I'm trying to get to this chart while I'm vamping here. Ah, here it is. I think I passed it. Here it is. He has four kinds of fun. And I haven't found the research that he's mentioning here, but he says there's hard. It's imagine a quadrant with in the upper left, it's hard, upper right, it's easy. Lower left, it's visceral. Lower right is social, right?
Mm.
Hard, easy, visceral, social. And that, and games are hard fun. And so are, you know, open-ended creative challenges, I would argue. And the problem is that since games are algorithmic, is that you can outgrow that fun for that particular game, typically.
Mm.
Typically. Some games, I would argue that they're hard to outgrow, like Tetris. But Tetris isn't winnable, so that's part of its...
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so I don't know. Anytime I can steer the conversation to this kind of stuff, why not?
Well, no, it's funny. I was in my own fuzzy way, I was thinking about this recently because Ann and I were talking about getting a new game, and we were trying to decide. We were going to go to just like the used game store, GameStop, and we're trying to decide between two different games.
Mm-hmm.
One was Epic Mickey. The other was Mario Baseball. And we were trying to work out the decision-making process on it. It's like, well, Mario Baseball is a game you can play forever because it's just opening up a game of baseball, right? It is repetitive, but it's never going to be the same. And I love baseball, so it's just let's play a game of baseball. Whereas Epic Mickey is an adventure game where you're going to play it through once, and it's going to be really hard. It's going to be really frustrating and also really thrilling at times. Then you open it up again, and maybe you play a few levels, and then you put it away. Like you, very rarely, rarely have I ever played an adventure game all the way through more than once. You know, I don't know about you.
Well, yeah. there's some exceptions, and ironically, one of them is a Mickey Mouse game for the Genesis called Castle of Illusion.
Oh, I remember that one, but I never played it.
And it's masterful, and then so the thing is, I think it when it comes down to when the craft level is at an incredible experience where like literally moving that character left and right and jumping feels awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all the other little puzzles that emanate from there, when that's the case and it's so tight, then yeah, you can re-consume it because it has it's about all these little moments and trade-offs and choices that you make as you go through these moments. And then, yeah, there's the punctuating points that don't have as much impress you as much when you see the same boss again, right?
Mm-hmm.
But all the rest of it is still rewarding and satisfying. So
okay,
it's less about the, you know, I don't know, that surface, whoa, cool, but it's got
I'm not just talking about novelty though. I'm talking about like going back to one of your earlier points about how like you can outgrow the hard fun of a game because you've got that one licked, right?
If it doesn't keep increasing the challenge, so you're no longer adapting to the new pattern. Yeah.
And a game like baseball is always new patterns to adapt to because it's so unpredictable. And even though it is a 9-inning thing with a predictable, like there's going to be 3 outs on each side,
mm-hmm.
But the actual gameplay itself is always very unpredictable. Sure. It seemed like, well, then what's the better value? That's what we were trying to break down. It's like, what's the better value? Is it the baseball game? Because we're going to get probably more long-term use out of it. Or is it Epic Mickey where we're going to get this huge rush of pleasure at the beginning of playing it, right?
Totally. Yeah, and that sounds like a really... Great. Well, which one won out? I mean,
we got both.
Given those models. You made a strong case for both. It's like, well, why would I have only one of these in my life?
Right.
Because I want both kinds of fun.
I tried to make a case for the baseball one saying, it's 2-player. We get to play together. And she's like, yeah, but you can watch me play Epic Mickey. I'm like, all right. But as a matter of fact, I do like watching people play video games. So
that is always nice.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry if I steered us off topic with that.
I think that rocks. So what's cool is it reminds me of I don't even know if it's fun. Whenever I encounter choices like that, it reminds me of I used to occasionally get the hot lunch in high school, right? Get the school lunch, whatever, and the lunch lady in her Eastern European accent would always ask me, you know, in the end, you know, once you got all your stuff on your plate, whatever, and you would get a one final choice, cookie or orange, right? Cookie or orange, right? And I don't know what to do. It's like, it's the delayed gratification thing in a way. It's whatever, and many days cookie won. So, but once in a while she'd let you get both.
Oh,
so that was always a curveball.
That's where curveballs began, with the Eastern European lunch lady.
Exactly.
So we'll have to do a little recording for that that we can use as the transition music for the curveball section. Cookie or orange?
Cookie or orange? Yeah. Nice.
Are we done?
I think we're done.
Okay.
All kinds of fun.
Okay, bye.
That's what we learned. Nice work, man.